Hey, everybody, this is JP from the band Clutch, and you are listening to Talk to Me.
This is Talk to Me. Your host, Joshua Toomey, bring you epic rants, anecdotes, and interviews with heavy hitters from hardcore
A New Life Begins!
To hair metal. This is Talk to Me.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Talk to Me, episode 254. The guest this week is John Paul Gaster of Clutch. Fantastic drummer, fantastic guest, and you guys will not be disappointed in this interview. Currently watching their live stream concert that they just put on with Crowbar. What an amazing event. So cool to see. So cool to kind of see some live music, even if it is through the internet, and we are not all in the same room together. Hopefully that will be sooner than later, and we can all get back to some shows. The interview with JP, we talk about the history of Clutch, kind of going through some of their catalog, talking about tours with Limp Bizkit, Marilyn Manson, and so much more, and even get a little Pantera talk in there. So you know I can't have a guest on that toured with Pantera and not get a great Pantera story out of them. As always, if you enjoy this podcast, make sure you are sharing it with your friends. Share it on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, however you get it out there. That would be much appreciated. Leave a nice five-star rating, nice five-star review over on Apple Podcasts. And I did notice on my Podcast Addict app, it has a review section now too, so hit that review button on your Podcast Addict. Leave a nice five-star rating, nice five-star review. So let's check out some classic Clutch. Let's go with some Animal Farm. Talk to JP. Listen to some more Clutch, and then I will talk to you guys momentarily.
Listen up, you stinking maggots! It seems you just don't get it! Well, I've been appointed to inform you, your days are numbered! You would cry, you would scream if you knew half the things I see! Please, please, just do as I say, repent and leave your evil ways! Meanwhile, please drop from the sky! People disappear and bullets fly. Little gray men are coming our way. Tastes just like chicken, they say. Actually, they're all around. Secret bunkers underground. Round them up, skin them alive. Roll it, roll it, roll and ride. Carnarism grow. Dozens of brothers round the globe. And take 12 down the stairs. Skull and cake, skull and bone. It's only just begun. The best is yet to come. Every up 51, the spawn of Babylon. Couldn't give a damn about JFK. Everything's conspiracy. What if he's a fact if they had their way? Tastes just like chicken, they say. I know it's hard to swallow. It must sound too perfect. But you can bench up on a dollar, I ain't going with the rest.
All right, guys, let's welcome from Clutch, JP Gaster. Man, how you doing today, bud?
Doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. You know, we're recording this on Tuesday. Your online show will be tomorrow in real time, and then this will air on Thursday. So I guess we'll just have to act like it's already happened. So so how was the online rock and roll show?
Well, so far so good.
Yeah,
you know, we've done a few streams, and you know, each one that we do, we learn a little something from it. You know, it's crazy, you know, when stuff gets, you know, gets difficult, when we have something like a pandemic, you know, of course there's a lot of bad stuff that's associated with that. But, you know, the good thing is that people learn new stuff, and I think there's a lot of innovation going on, and, you know, we're pretty excited that, you know, for pushing 50 guys, we're able to figure out how to stream a show from their rehearsal place. So we're excited.
You know, being in the position you guys are, taking over being the label and just kind of being a self-contained unit, do you feel like maybe you had an upper hand when it came to quarantine time and, you know, getting things like this together where you didn't have to jump through a bunch of hoops?
For sure. Yeah. Having the flexibility to call your own shots really, it enabled us to move a lot more quickly than other bands are able to, I think. We were actually thinking about that. I'm sure there's a lot of bands out there who aren't even able to do something like this because they have, agreements with labels and publishing companies that don't allow them to just play their music when they want to. And, that's something that we do not take for granted.
And, this concert will have had Crowbar on it. What's your history with Crowbar?
I think we first played with Crowbar probably in 1995 or 96. We've known those guys for quite some time. And we've toured, I guess we've never actually toured with Crowbar. We played a couple shows with them. Jimmy Bauer was in Corrosion of Conformity at the first tour that we did with them.
Nice.
We know Jimmy for a long time. We're big I Hate God fans. So it's cool. It's like it's a little community, I suppose.
That seems like a very natural fit. You know, it seems like you guys probably should have toured many a time over the years when you think about it. And, it's kind of cool. They're kind of in the same camp as you guys, kind of have their own little domain going on too. So they don't have a ton of overhead and people saying yes or no above them.
That's right. I guess after you've been in the business for a while, you can start to learn to call your own shots.
Nice. Kind of looking back at it and, starting Weathermaker and kind of taking all of this into your own hands, what was kind of some of the first stuff you're like that you saw major labels doing that you were like, we're never going to do X?
Well, I suppose the real main thing was, this idea of radio. We got signed at a time when just about, it seemed like every band we knew was at least getting looked at by labels. And I guess what we didn't fully appreciate or fully understand was that really everything was just so radio driven. And the idea of us getting a song on the radio, I mean, even today is a difficult challenge, but man, the way we sounded in 1992, I can't imagine anybody would want to listen to our shit on the radio. So I guess that was both a challenge and a source of great frustration when we were dealing with the major labels.
I just listened to a very good podcast about the history of Payola. And so it's kind of, that whole, $100 handshakes and all that stuff when it comes to radio, that's, may not necessarily be there as in a $100 handshake, but it's, if you play this artist, you'll get this amount of, promotion on your radio station, things like that. So yeah, it's got to be a pain trying to get anything onto commercial radio these days.
I suppose it is. I wonder how much has changed. To be honest, in the last couple records that we've done, we haven't put a whole lot of effort into, certainly not terrestrial radio.
Yeah.
And we put maybe a little bit into satellite radio, but not nearly as much as we would have done, say, 10 years ago. It's interesting the number of spins that a band gets these days has very little to do with how many records they sell or how many, how many spins they get on a Spotify, for example. And it also has really very little to do with ticket sales. We've learned that over the years as well.
Now, are you the type to, I know that you guys do a different set list every night. Do you guys look at anything like Spotify analytics and see like, hey, here in Des Moines, they really love Shogun, so we better pull that one out tonight, anything like that?
Sure. We've done that before. There's different things we think about when we're making the set list. It might be, it might be what the festival is that we're playing. For example, it might be the other bands that are on the bill, the time of day. It could be, as you've mentioned, what songs are popular on Spotify, in that particular town.
Yeah.
But it's a fun way to keep things fresh, not only for us, but for the audience.
Now, kind of heading back to radio play and things like that, I guess the way that I discovered Clutch was the Shogun video on Headbangers Ball. Like, so, I mean, that was a, you know, that popping up in the middle of Entombed and Carcass, you know, it definitely stood out, but I think it stood out in a very cool way.
Yeah, that was huge for us. I remember, I actually remember going to Tim's house to watch Headbangers Ball, hoping that they would play our video. And not only did they play it, but the Cavalera brothers from Sepultura were on the show. And Max was wearing a Clutch t-shirt. And I can't tell you the joy that we got out of seeing that. It was really amazing. And shortly after that, we actually got the opportunity to go on tour with Sepultura. And that was, for us, I think, probably one of the best tours we've ever done, both from the standpoint of making some new fans and just learning and watching a killer band.
Yeah, those early tours, man, they were very cool. Like I was telling you before we started recording, I think this first time I saw you was with Prong. And then I was underage and not allowed into the venue when you guys came through with Marilyn Manson. And the venue knew me enough to know, like, no, not tonight. Like, normally I could get in the over 18 shows, but they're like, no, right. Manson was just had too much heat on him. And they're like, we're not going to get caught with a dude that's like 16 in here.
Right. I can imagine.
But yeah, and that's the one thing that's been kind of great about Clutch is, you know, you go to a Clutch show today and you'll see Manson shirts, you'll see Sepultura shirts, you know, you'll see COC shirts, you'll see just a wide array of fans at the Clutch shows. It's not a, you know, just this one specific type of fan. It's like Clutch is for everybody, you know?
It is. And it took us a while to figure that out. You know, when we got offered the Sepultura tour, that was a tour that we were very excited about jumping on. Prong was the same way. Monster Magnet was the same way. And then Marilyn Manson got offered to us. And, we first looked at that and we were not excited about that. You know, we definitely had a feeling about what that tour would have been like. And it took some encouragement from both the label and our management to say, look, you guys should go, you should take advantage of this. And man, I'm so glad we did, because we made so many fans on that tour. And you know what? He was great. The band was great. The crew took care of us. I saw a lot of shit that I never would have seen before, learned a lot of shit. And, you know, looking back on it now, that's probably one of the most important tours I think we ever did.
Yeah, I think Neil, when I had Neil on the show a while back, that tour was brought up, and he said, on the actual tour, you didn't think anybody liked you, but the next tour, next time you come through town, you know, there's 50 kids wearing Manson shirts, so you knew you affected some people.
That's it, and it's been like that for every tour we've done, you know. Pantera was the same way, even Limp Bizkit, you know, Coheed and Cambria. We've had the opportunity to play with so many different kinds of bands. And because of that, I think, you know, as you mentioned, the audience that comes to see a Clutch show is really wide ranging.
Now, the one thing that I wanted to get to with Clutch, you know, no matter what you guys do, it sounds like Clutch. And, you know, what do you guys kind of attribute that to?
I think it's just the amount that we've played, the amount of music that we've written together. You know, when you spend time on your instrument, just learning the instrument and listening to music that has inspired you. I think that process is sort of a natural thing, and it's different for every musician, your relationship with your instrument, but that grows. And over time you start to develop your own sound. And for me, that's my favorite thing about a musician. It's not necessarily how much the guy can shred, you know, how quickly he can play, but more so, how quickly can I identify who that person is? And we could talk all day. There are so many guitarists out there and singers and drummers who just by just playing a chord, you can sort of tell, I know who that person is. And so, you know, for me, that's a lot of fun. And I think that just makes us sound who we are.
You know, you guys seem to be one band that's, you know, road dogs, always out on tour, and you're just constantly working. So what has this kind of shutdown quarantine done for you guys just to kind of like sit back and take a breath?
Well, it's definitely been that. It's definitely been a chance to breathe a little bit and kind of reassess our situation. you know, it's been difficult. We've coming off the road and having a break like this it's tough. I'm not sure really what our next move is at this point. It looks like there probably won't be any shows for the rest of the year. So we're gonna try to write some material. We're going to try streaming some more shows after this one. I'm sure that this first one's going to be a success. We're going to learn from it, and you know the beauty of it too is that, you know, because we have so many in our cap to stream different shows, maybe try different themes, and keep things interesting at least until we can get back out there and start playing again. Because that's what we do best. That's what we've always been doing. You know, that's how we develop the sound that we have, just from getting out there and playing. And I can't tell you how much I can't wait to get back out there and do some gigs.
Now, this is one of those things where, you know, some of the smaller clubs are they're being talked about maybe opening back up, you know, a 150, 200 seat room, you know, something up around the Baltimore area. If it does open up, I mean, could you hold up in a residency for a few shows or, you know, do a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday type deal? Are you guys looking into stuff like that?
Sure. I think that's probably a good possibility. I was actually thinking about that myself the other day. Maybe that's one way to sort of get things going again is that, you know, these little venues, I think, they're going to be the first ones that open up, and we're going to learn from how to do shows again by going back to these smaller venues and working through this stuff. And I think it'll be great too, because, you know, it's as nice as it is to play a big venue, every town has to have a small venue. You need those little places for those fans to get out there and cut their teeth. And so by getting back into those smaller rooms, hopefully it'll inject a little bit of energy into them as well. And, you know, hopefully we all come out of this thing a little better than when we went into it.
Now, I did want to get back to one thing with the set list. And I talked about you guys, you know, switch up the set, you know, make it interesting for yourselves. What are the rules on that? Are there a handful of songs at the beginning of the tour that you can pick from, or can you pick from the entire catalog?
Pretty much the entire catalog. On the last couple tours that we did, when we were both in Europe and then we finished it up here in the States just before New Year's, we really started digging deep. And I think probably by the time we finished out the year, I think this, we had probably over 80 songs that we were pulling from to put these sets together. And you know, the cool thing about that is that you sort of get back in touch with the, you know, catalog that you might have written 20 years ago, and looking at that material now, through the lens of all the experiences that we've had, it can be exciting, because you discover stuff that you didn't know you were doing back then, and also I hear influences that I'd sort of forgotten about that come through in some of those old songs. So it's good on a lot of levels.
Has anyone given you a set list and you look at it and you're like, what song is that? You know, you have to, like, because I, you know, with such a vast catalog, if you hit a deep track off of, you know, Passive Restraints or something, you're like, what's going on here?
Well, luckily the one rule that we do have is that if we're going to pull a song that we haven't played in a while, we got to do it at sound check. So oftentimes our sound checks are us sort of playing maybe an old song out of the catalog just to reacquaint ourselves with the parts and the idea of it. But you know, it makes it fun, and for that reason, I can't wait to get back on the road.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing that I talked about earlier, you know, kind of seeing you around the Manson Times and Prong, and even, you know, obviously those early headlining shows. The one thing I saw you do a couple of times was just set up a drum kit in the dressing room or a spare dressing room and just jam during the day, and that's something I don't know if I've ever seen again. And then I saw recently or a while back, you know, you have some video of you setting up in like a trailer and just kind of just jamming throughout the day. And it just really, really showed me how much you love drums and love music, just for the fact that, you know, setting up a drum kit is not an easy thing to do at a random time in Nashville, you know. So to do that, to just kind of rock out during the day, kind of shows a lot about you and about your passion towards drums.
Well, thank you. I can tell you it is not a chore. It is something I very much enjoy. Being on the road, there is a lot of downtime, and I've learned that that's also the perfect time to practice. You can get away from, the stuff that's happening at home. You can get away from whatever bills you have or whatever silliness is going on in the news, and you just focus on the instrument, and I enjoy that process. I think the thing that I've grown to appreciate the most is it's not so much about let me play these paradiddles at whatever tempo so that when I get up on stage I can play them blazing fast. That for me that is not the goal. For me the goal is to spend time with the instrument and appreciate the process of learning the instrument, of practicing the instrument. And listening to yourself and being critical of yourself. You know, a lot of times when I set up in a trailer like that, I just play. I think people walk by and they listen to what I'm playing, and they have this idea of what I'm this guy that plays in this band Clutch. It's supposed to sound a certain way when I practice. And I've learned to divorce myself from that. In fact, I sometimes. I don't want it to sound good because if it sounds good, then I'm not really, not practicing anything. I'm not learning anything. So, becoming comfortable with that took a while. But man, I just enjoy it, and every minute I can that I've got to spend on the drums, I appreciate it and enjoy it.
Those are those times where you set up the double kick and, practice alongside old Morbid Angel records and things, right?
Well, I tell you what, I, first of all, I am a Morbid Angel fan.
Oh, they're great.
And secondly, there was a point, during the lockdown where I did have two bass drums set up in my basement and I was giving it a shot and I realized I'm just as shitty at double bass today as I was back in 1990.
Yeah, there's some double bass on that early Morbid Angel stuff. What's the drummer's name? Like Pete Commando something or other, but yeah, man, he was a monster, and there was some times where the music would cut out, and it would just be double bass, and you're like, man, that's just too good.
Yeah, Pete Sandoval.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so those early Morbid Angel records were super important. Altars of Madness, especially, I think that was one that really knocked me out. Because, of course, there was the brutality of it all, but there was some beautiful playing. There was some inventive shit going on, and rhythmically there's a lot of cool stuff happening. I feel like there's always bands that come out of a genre that sort of transcend the genre.
Yeah.
I think Bad Brains did that for hardcore. You can call that a hardcore band, but they're bigger than that.
Oh yeah.
And I think those early Morbid Angels records are the same way. Sure, you can call it death metal or. Whatever you want to, Florida metal or whatever you want to call it, but it's bigger than that. And those guys, I think, influenced generations of musicians after them.
It just hit me that I believe Shauna Potter is on one of your latest. I know the latest videos. So what's your connection with her?
Shauna works at a guitar repair place in Baltimore called Big Crunch Audio, and she. And Brooks run this shop out of the same building that we do actually a lot of recording in. Jay Robbins has a recorder, a studio called Magpie Cage. And so they run a guitar shop out of there. We're friendly with them, known them for years. And we needed a female character to be in our Willie Nelson video.
Yes.
It just so happened that she also sang backups on that tune. And so we said, hey, come on out and hang with us and let's make a video. And it was great. We had fun. It's another one of those things, too, where maybe people who are not familiar with Clutch but are familiar with War on Women, they see here in the video and vice versa for Clutch fans. It's just good stuff, man. We bring it's all music. Let's just appreciate one another and let's support one another.
The Vault series, you guys did one thing that when I first saw it, I was like, oh no. And that was the re-record of Spacegrass. But I will say that, man, it sounds so good, and it sounds just, it didn't lose anything, and it almost made it better. So I think you did one thing that most bands cannot do, and then it's re-record a classic and actually update it and make it sound better.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That was something we certainly considered, and I'm sure there's a whole bunch of people who still prefer the original, and that's okay by me. You know, the purpose of the Vault series is it gives us an opportunity to get into the studio and not necessarily think about recording an entire record. It's more about just getting in there, keeping our studio chops up, and just trying some stuff. So we did some covers. We re-recorded some old Clutch classics. But this way, you know, more than anything, we stay comfortable being in the studio, because I think that's important. The studio environment is so different than I think what we do best, which is being on stage. It's important for us to keep in touch with that. And so this allows us to just go in the studio every, you know, maybe a couple months, record some songs, and not really have to think so much about, you know, how does this fit in with the rest of the album, and who's going to mix this, and, you know, does this song work with the rest of the record? It's more just, it keeps it fun, it keeps it light, and then we, you know, we get to hang out with our buddy Jay Robbins, who's always fun to hang out with, and so it's good stuff.
Yeah, it was very good, man. And the, you know, just like I said, it's very hard for bands to kind of capture that magic twice, and I think you guys did it. Was there any, you know, business side of that kind of coming back around to where maybe you don't own the rights to the original, so you want the re-record so you can put it in syncs and things like that, or is it just purely, you know, just studio stuff?
No, it really was just a sort of an artistic choice. You know, we wanted to do it. I think I'm extremely proud of the self-titled record. The studio that we recorded in, and in the room that we actually recorded the drums that for that record, is probably smaller than a lot of people's closets. we were able to get a big sound out of it in the end. But I think we were all just sort of curious to see what would happen if we recorded that record today in a proper studio, and then had our buddy Vance Powell mix it. And, you know, the results speak for themselves. I think, you know, we were all proud of the work we did.
Well, all right, man. Well, as we wrap this up, and as with any band that I've had on that's got to tour with the great Pantera, do you have any great Pantera stories for the podcast?
Well, I can tell you that band at that time was nothing like I'd ever seen before. I watched every single show. And the power that band was able to put off stage, I think was pretty mind blowing. The guys in the band were all great dudes, they were humble and, happy to have us on tour. Very friendly towards us. And, those shows that we played were some of the biggest shows we ever played up to that point. I think probably the one show that really stands out for me the most was when we played in Brownsville, Texas, which is almost on the Mexican line, super far south in Texas. We've never played that far south ever again since then. And the crowd there was just absolutely on fire. And I think probably a lot of people think, you know, that might have been sort of the peak of the band when they had their catalog going for them. They had the stage show was totally happening, and those guys were just absolutely on fire. And so I just have good, fond memories of that tour. And I would love to do something like that again one day. Of course, that's not going to happen. But it was a beautiful tour, and we were very happy to be a part of it.
Well, typically here at the end, you would say, you know, what's the rest of the year look like for you? But I'm assuming you're just kind of going day by day and just kind of getting word as we go, right?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we're taking this thing day by day, as you said. We'll start writing some material. I would expect that we're going to get into the studio sometime soon, and we're just looking for stuff to open up. You know, start getting out there and doing some gigs. our summer festival tour that was supposed to happen this summer in Europe. Got postponed to next year. It's pretty crazy. We were sort of able to move the entire thing forward 1 year. So we're hoping that those shows happen. But in the meantime, we're going to keep streaming. I'm going to keep practicing, and I'll probably spend a little bit more time in the garden this summer.
Well, don't pull a Brian May and tear your butt or whatever he did.
I know, that poor guy, man. He keeps, poor dude.
Your tragic gardening accident, you know, you don't want that to happen.
No, I'll be safe out there.
Well, very cool, man. Well, take care and good luck tomorrow with the live show, or as podcast world will know, yesterday. But yeah, man, hopefully everything goes well and you guys can start a revolution on the internet and we can have tons of these live shows.
Awesome. I love that attitude. Thank you.
Large and small, sector, vector, eat them all. It's already in the rise. Among the mental ones, a messenger will soon arrive. 1-0-0-0-1-1-1-0-1-0-1. Periodic table with a center piece of mind. 1-0-0-0-1-1-1-0-1-0-1. Periodic table with a center piece of mind. Man alive, the jiving lyrics. Radioactive, don't come near it. Temple of Syrinx having the big sale of the year. Man alive, the jiving lyrics. Radioactive, don't come near it. Temple of Syrinx having the big sale of the year. Ain't nothing new about it. Gonna be a big brawl over it, like them little bitty babies in the king cake. Bonnie and Clyde, the whole dome. The shackles of automata will shatter like their bones. 1-0-0-0-1-1-1-0-1-0-1. Periodic table with a Santa piece of mind. 1-0-0-0-1-1-1-0-1-0-1. Periodic table with a Santa piece of mind. Man alive, the jiving lyrics. Radioactive, don't come near it. Temple of Syrinx having the bake sale of the year. Man alive, the jiving lyrics. Radioactive, don't come near it. Temple of Syrinx having the bake sale of the year. We'll be right back.
from Clutch, and you are listening to Talk To Me.
This is Dan Mays from Clutch, and you're listening to Talk To Me.
All right, huge thank you to JP for taking the time. Thank you guys for taking the time for checking out the Talk To Me podcast. And once again, if you support what we do over here, it would be great if you let your friends know that you are listening to the Talk To Me podcast. Facebook.com/TalkToMeTalk, at TalkToMeTalk on Twitter. Send me an email, TalkToMeTalk@gmail.com. And so until next Thursday, I've been Joshua Toomey. This has been the Talk To Me podcast.